Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's a brand new feature. It's the health feature. It's one of those where, yes, you may not have been, you may not have been feeling great. You maybe are delaying your visit to the doctor. Maybe you think something is wrong, but you really don't want to hear about it. We are all like that. I promise you, we're all like that. But we are going to have a conversation about a discussion and a topic that's very sensitive. And I implore you to pick up a call. If you think something is wrong, please don't feel bad, don't feel embarrassed. You don't have to give us your real name. You can do that. You can call us on 086-000-0959. You can call us or you can send a voice note, even if you don't want to call, on 063-688-0959. I fully appreciate the sensitivity of this conversation, and I promise you we will treat it as sensitive as possible. So on the line with us is Head of Urology Department at the Sefako Makgato Health Sciences University, Professor Shingai Mutambira, who has very graciously agreed to talk to us about this very sensitive discussion, prostate cancer. Prof, good evening and welcome. Lovely talking to you.
Good evening to you as well, and it's a great pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Let's just debunk it and give us an open, very broad definition of what prostate cancer is, Prof.
Yeah, I think guys misunderstand. We've got, as guys, a little gland sitting just below our bladders, all the way around the pipe for passing urine, which is also the pipe for ejaculation, which we call the urethra. It's buried quite deeply in our pelvis, so you can't really feel it as a general rule. But what it's doing, the main job of the prostate is, most of what a guy ejaculates is actually not sperm. Less than 1% of what a guy ejaculates is sperm. Most of what comes out is stuff made by this prostate and another gland called the seminal vesicle, which is sitting just behind it. These are things like sugars and proteins and stuff which support the sperm outside the body. And for guys, after the age of about 40, in every guy, whether we like it or not, our prostates start to get bigger, and they also are the commonest site for cancers in guys as well. And as they get bigger, the majority of normal enlargements can block up the pipe and give a bit of difficulty passing urine. But prostate cancers, which, by the way, President Mandela and Bishop Tutu both had prostate cancer, and Bishop Tutu was actually he's the sponsor of the Prostate Cancer Foundation of South Africa. But the point is that the prostate cancer can be cured, but it just needs to be picked up early. And how do we pick it up? We have a bit of a discussion with the guy once a year, pretty much, if you can. And then we do a blood test called a PSA, or prostate specific antigen, which can tell us if there's a possibility of cancer, and then we can pick it up and we can actually cure it.
From my understanding, Prof, one of the problems with this is that you're not necessarily going to feel pain in the early stages. And that's why sometimes it takes too long for it to be detected.
Oh, yeah, you're completely correct. The problem with prostate cancers is that the normal enlargement, which happens after about the age of 40, happens around the pipe for passing urine. And so guys get some difficulty passing urine, a bit of overworking to the bladder. They rush to the toilet. They wake up too many times at night. But prostate cancer itself usually develops on the outside part of the prostate. So before it actually gets to the point where it can actually be cured, it's not going to give any symptoms. And that's where the problem lies. And I think that's why guys have to remember that it's important for you to get checked out. I think one of the side issues is we must remember that females in general are much more clever than guys in so many ways. The average female will see their doctor about five times more in their life than, or healthcare practitioner at least, five times more than a guy. And that's one of the reasons why females live at least 6 years longer than men. And we guys have to start taking more control of our health. It's not only about the prostate. It's also about our blood pressure. It's about our sugar. It's about all of these things. Literally once a year, just get yourself checked out. See what's happening. Take care of yourself. get a blood test. And I know a lot of guys get stressed about the idea of putting a finger in the anus to feel the prostate. That's no longer part of the standard care. We don't have to do that anymore. What we need to do once a year from the age of 40, get yourself generally checked, get this blood test, the PSA done, and then that will direct us and make a decision on whether we need to do any further investigations.
And how accurate is this PSA test?
Again, it's like you're one of my residents. You're actually so clever about this. The reality is it's not that, it's relatively sensitive, but it's not that specific. So essentially, if we're doing it, we can pick it up. It generally will tell us that there's a pretty good idea that there's a prostate cancer, but it's not very specific. It doesn't tell us for sure, because there are lots of things that can happen from this blood test. Let me put it this way. This PSA, what it's doing, it's actually a test about a specific enzyme, which is in our normal ejaculate, as guys. When a guy ejaculates, it comes out a bit sticky. And then after about 20 minutes, it becomes watery. And what makes it watery is the same PSA stuff. So the reality is that it the only reason why it gets raised when there's cancer is not because the cancer is increasing the amount of this PSA. It's because of there's some blockages along the pipes, and it's just sort of making it go into the bloodstream. So even if you have a raised PSA, please don't be stressed. Most of the time, we're not going to react to it, and we're going to do a second test or a third test before we make a decision. And even if we do pick up cancer, remember that if you pick it up early, you've got about a 95% chance you'll be cured from the cancer. So please don't be worried about it. Just rather just get it checked out and see what you do from there.
90% of the time you'll be cured, but at what stage should you catch it for it to be cured?
Oh, yeah. I think that's the biggest point. You want to get it checked out. You want to get it picked up early. If we pick it up early, we can remove the cancer. We can give radiation to the cancer. And to be honest, about half of the cancers are not going to give you any problems anyways, but we don't want to miss the ones that are nasty. I think for the guys who are a little bit stressed out there, remember that even if I was to pick up a cancer in anyone, be it myself or anyone else, it's probably not going to give you any problems for about 10 years. But you don't want to wait until 10 years later when the cancer is spreading to your bones and doing all sorts of nastiness. That's where the problem lies. So the thing is that it's a matter of making sure you get checked out early. But even if you do have cancer which is spread, and all of these stage fours and stuff that people like to talk about where it's spread to the bones and stuff, there's still so many therapies there. We've got so many good therapy. And let's put it this way. Even if you have a cancer which is spread to the bones, it's all over the body. If we put you on appropriate treatments, you're probably not going to have any problems. You're probably going to be fine for about 5 to 10 years. It's really not that bad, but you need to get checked out early. That's the most important thing. Just get it checked. The earlier you get it checked out, before it starts giving you things like squashing your nerves and stuff like that, you need to get it checked out. And that's why every guy, even if you're scared and you think your cancer is stage four, there's still so many therapies. Please go and see your healthcare provider so that they can deal with this.
Let's talk about those therapies and the options a patient has.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Essentially, what we really want to do is pick up the cancer when it's early. And if it's early, and it's just in the prostate itself, there are, for our purposes, three options. One is, if it's really not a nasty, nasty cancer, we just observe it, we just look at it, check it out, and once in every couple of years, we do some blood tests, we do some scans and stuff like that. And that works for at least 50% of these cancers. If it's a little bit more aggressive or troublesome, what we do is there's two options generally. One of them is to remove the cancer itself. It's called a radical prostatectomy, where we actually cut out the cancer. It's excellent option. It does have some slight increased risk of wetting yourself and urinary continence issues. But besides that, it works well. Then there's radiation treatments as well, which are, for our purposes, two. One is where they use a linear accelerator, which is essentially a big machine which focuses radiation onto the prostate. It works, again, 95% of the time it's going to work well. We can also give radiation seeds into the prostate itself. called brachytherapy, which are various types, and they both work very well. Excellent options for those things. And if we are doing that, we always like to say there's a trifecta, which is essentially about cancer control. There's about urinary continence, not wetting yourself and making sure you're not wetting yourself, basically, from your urine. And then there's sexual dysfunction, which is usually about erections, the erection problems. Now, for all three of those, essentially the cancer control for early stage cancer is 95%. Mm. All of them are going to work very well. If you're looking at the continence, for the radical prostatectomy, you're probably looking at about 12, 15% of people who will be not wet, will still be wetting themselves, but there are treatments for that as well. Mm. For the radiation, it's probably around 5%. As far as the sexual dysfunction, you're looking probably around 20% for the radical prostatectomy or the radiation therapy. For the active surveillance, it's really essentially zero unless there's a problem. So again, you want to get yourself picked up early. Now, if you are looking at the more progressive disease, there's so many things that we can treat there. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that the majority of prostate cancers are dependent on the so-called man hormone, which is also found in females, by the way, because females, it also impacts on their sexuality as well. It's testosterone. We have to get rid of the testosterone. And when we're doing the removal of testosterone, we give something which stops your own testicles producing testosterone, or we remove the testicles depending on what happens. But we have to add on other medications as well, because we know that even within the cancer themselves, there are some things that happen in the genes that can actually work to make the cancer progress. And if we actually give these other things, which we call androgen receptor pathway inhibitors, there's a big name for nothing. But the reality is actually just super stopping testosterone. You're literally looking at anywhere between 5 and 10 years before this, even a stage 4 cancer is going to progress. Mm. You must relax, get yourself checked out, get yourself treated.
So when all these options are presented to one, how does a patient decide what's good for me? Or how would you go about it? You know, here I'm sitting next to Professor Shangai, who knows what he knows. But do we even get consulted? When I say we, I'm pretending to be the patient in front of you.
Yeah, you're not pretending. You're so perceptive, actually, to be honest, because this is exactly the problem. I think one of the biggest issues that we have is as Western medical practitioners is that we're not as empathetic as we should. By the way, just I do a lot of work with traditional healers, and they one of the best things about them is that they actually communicate with their patients so much better than Western practitioners. Mm. And I think we as Western practitioners need to actually make better efforts. And like you're saying, it's about discussion and talking. And I think that's the whole point. We have to have a discussion about what the benefits, the side effects, the how this is going to progress going forward. And I think a lot of guys don't understand that they are in control of their health. We must make sure that we make the decisions that make the best benefit for us. Even when I tell a patient that, for example, I must remove his prostate because it's a cancer, and he says no, he doesn't want to be wet. I've had lots of patients, like for example, Muslim patients, who cannot go to the mosque if they're wetting themselves, and they will say never, they cannot do that. And I completely understand. Mm. There's so many options. So let's have a discussion. And like you're saying, it's so important for us to have those discussions about our general health as well as our physical health, to make sure that we actually make the best decisions for ourselves. But you are in control. Don't think that your treating healthcare practitioner is the controller. You are the controller. Make that decision. Have a discussion. If you're not comfortable with your healthcare practitioner, any good healthcare HPC will actually make a decision and say, listen, you can go and see somebody else and have a second opinion. Don't think that you're limited just because one person is saying something.
I want to ask, you've just mentioned the fact that, you know, you consult and work a lot alongside traditional healers as well. I want to know whether Are there things that one can take to prevent? So I know that often we speak of health, general health, for your own good. Maybe it's good to eat well, exercise and the like. And then, of course, you know, social media throws all kinds of things at us. You know, drink ginger, drink this, drink that, and the next thing. Just generally, are there things that one can proactively start consuming to prevent prostate cancer?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I think you're going to have to become one of my residents. You must work here. Anyway, the point is that you're quite completely correct. I think what you said initially was the most important part, that we must always bring the big five. We're in Africa, so we like the big five. And I think the big five impacts on every aspect of our health, which is a decent diet, not just the type. The numbers of calories are important, but also the types, because the ultra-processed foods increase the risk of essentially every cancer because of changes in the microbiome, in the biology, in your bacteria, in your body, and various other things. Good diet. A bit of physical activity, not exercise, because I don't like this exercise thing, because it actually messes up, makes people believe that they have to do this.
Yes.
10,000 steps, which
yes,
makes sense. That was actually developed by a Japanese company, the first people who made a smartphone to actually measure. It's a number of, just do a bit of physical activity. I don't want to be pontificating, but smoking is the most important social construct that can actually make a difference to your life.
Mm.
And again, it's not pontification, but the point is that you can make that change, and if you want to. The fourth one is about not too much of excess of anything, including alcohol or any drugs or anything like that. Which I'm probably bit of a problem with that, but I do like my beer. But at the end of the day, you decrease the numbers of those. And then the fifth one, I think, which is really underestimated, is stress and anxiety. Stress and anxiety is such a huge aspect. About 85% of South Africans currently have stress or anxiety. It's a physical and chemical thing, which is actually causing damage to your blood vessels, causing you to have problems with increasing cancers, increasing all sorts of things. Please stop that. Make that the most. But if you're going to look at specifically at prostate cancer, there are a couple of things which can be helpful to prevent prostate cancer. All of them are not 100% set in stone, so they're just useful. So let's just consider them. One of them is to increase the number of what we call lycopenes in your diet. Lycopenes are a specific antioxidant, which is released from cooked tomatoes, but it's also from other fruits and vegetables as well, and some other proteins as well. The important thing to remember, again, always take a thing with a pinch of salt. The company which actually did the trial about lycopenes was Dole Monsanto, which is the biggest fruit and veg company in America, and their biggest product, as far as costs as sales go, is actually canned tomatoes, because lycopenes are not released from fresh tomatoes, only from canned or cooked tomatoes. And their biggest product is canned tomatoes, which is actually a fruit. It's not a vegetable. And and what they didn't tell us from the trials, because it does decrease your risk of prostate cancer a little bit, is that you can get about 1,000 times more lycopenes from melons. And melons are not their biggest seller, so they didn't mention it. So just keep it in mind. But lycopenes are useful. The second one, which is, I think, pretty useful, is sex. Because we know from Australian data, which we actually analyzed as well, is that the more sex a guy has, it decreases the amount of semen in the prostate, which then decreases the risk of prostate cancer. So out there, I would like to say that when we do this thing in culture, that slow poison, where the partner kills the guy by giving them poison. One of the worst sort of slow poisons for guys is not to have sex. Have sex. More sex,
so
the better. And it decreases your risk of prostate cancer. And then there are a couple of other things you can do that just make your life better as well. There's no real pills that are going to improve it, to be honest, although there are some that can help to decrease the risk of nasty cancers. But I would say general, the five big five of health, exercise, diet, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. The best, a bit of lycopenes, a bit more sex, and generally just being happy as well, because you know, stress is really one of the biggest killers.
Professor Shenga, I didn't hear you talk about Mbiza. You know, this is...
Mbiza, yes, yes, I love Mbiza.
And nobody knows what's in it, but they swear by it.
Many people do swear by it, but the reality is that, in fact, I always like to punt my mother, because her thesis, she was the first person, I think, as far as I know,
yes,
who actually did her PhD was actually on traditional medications.
Excellent.
And she found that Mbiza was the main benefit was most people were using it for the bowel. It's got nothing to do with sex as a generalist. It's 70% of the time it's for that. But the point is that most of the Mbizas contain something called cantharidine. Now, cantharidine is actually a toxin. It actually causes irritation to the pipe for passing urine, to the bladder and kidneys. Can actually cause kidney failure, can cause liver failure, lots of things. That we actually call it muti poisoning.
Wow.
And so I'm not convinced that you should be using it, but it can improve your sex life a little bit. It's not
just vitality, I suppose.
No, it's not because of vitality. It's because it's causing an irritation to the pipe for passing urine, which causes the reflex.
Oh.
So it's really not the best way to actually improve your sex life or your thing. But now, having said that, I'm going to go back and remind you that I think the traditional healers, their communication is so brilliant. So that's what I love. Mm. But I'd be a little bit careful about some of these imbizos and things, because, they're actually toxins. They cause a lot of, they can cause diarrhea or constipation. They can also cause this, and they can cause blood in your urine. It can be a little bit of a suspicious thing. So I would be a little bit wary about it. Rather go and see your healthcare provider, because we know that there are a lot of other things that can help.
But you make such an important point. So let's talk a little bit about the connection between, or if there is, maybe there isn't, the connection between what would be a clean gut, what people think is a clean gut, and sexual health. So is it true? Are they connected, or it's just a feel good thing and really no connection at all?
No, it's completely connected. Thank you so much. That again, I'm gonna just hire you as one of my residents. You're completely correct. You must remember that you've got 10 times more bacteria in your body than you do have cells. So you're essentially a bacteria walking around with a couple of human bits and pieces inside you. Most of these bacteria are super good guys. They're helping you. They're protecting you. They're making sure that you don't get cancers. They're making you don't get obese. They're doing so many things. But the problem is that we're overusing, first of all, a lot of antibiotics, which are actually killing off the good guys. There are lots of other medications and things that we're using. For example, even sweeteners and things. Mm. We know they impact on this microbiome. It's so important for us to remember that we're interrelated. I think everything is interrelated. We have to start recognizing that everything is interrelated. So I think not just to stop saying taking something or not taking antibiotics. Sometimes you need antibiotics. Sometimes you need other things. But it's about balancing everything. And the balance comes generally from making sure that you do the big five, which I've already said.
Mm.
And if you do the big five, generally you're going to be in a good shape. But definitely the bacteria do impact on the cancer risk. And I mean, let's put it this way. We know, for example, that if you have a cancer and you're giving an antibiotic 30 days before or 30 days after you've done the operation to remove the cancer, it decreases your longevity. It increases the risk that you're going to die from your cancer, mainly because you're killing off these good bacteria. It's a huge thing. It's a huge thing going forward. And we're doing lots of trials at the moment about this as well. And I think in the future, it's actually going to impact massively. It's already impacting, to be honest.
Is there an impact, or at least is there a correlation between the use of blue pills and stuff like that to your cancer, to the prostate? Does it ever affect the prostate or not at all?
Blue pills. I'm sorry.
The blue pill. Viagras and
so on. Oh, the blue pills. Yeah. Oh, no. Those are great stuff. That's great stuff. Okay. Essentially, we're talking about sexual dysfunction. Sexual dysfunction, by the way, for guys and for females, by the way, is super related to your general health. If you have poor sexual function, you're more likely to get cancers. You're more likely to get infections. You're more likely to have heart attacks. All of these things are interrelated for various reasons. So the point is that if you're actually having a sexual dysfunction, which, by the way, especially for guys, because we're a bit moronic, if it's happening consistently, not all once in a while, because everyone has failures here and there, just relax. But if it's going on for 3 to 6 months and consistently, then there's an issue. But if you do have erectile dysfunction, the mainstay of treatments currently are what we call the phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors, or PDE5s. These are the Viagras, the Cialis, the Levitras of the world. All of them, what they're doing is they're just increasing blood flow to the penis when you feel sexually stimulated. Now, I think physiologically, let's take a step back. The biggest blood vessel in the body is really the one that goes to the leg. It's called the femoral artery. It's slightly bigger than the main one that goes to the brain, which is called the carotid, which is slightly bigger than the one that goes to the heart, which is, I'm even going over all over the place. But the point is the penile artery is slightly smaller than the main blood vessel, the coronary, which goes to the heart, which is slightly smaller than the one to the brain, the carotid, which is slightly smaller than the one to the femoral. And whether it be sugar diabetes, whether it be blood pressure, whether it be cholesterol, what's happening is there's damage to the skin coating in the inside of the blood vessel called the endothelium, which is causing a scar, which is then stopping blood going into the blood vessels. And if you consider that if you've got erectile dysfunction, your blood vessel to the penis is a little bit smaller than the one to the heart, you're at a heart attack risk, because the heart can still get blood going through it. So the point is that if you have any of these problems, there's an issue. Now, when you use any of the PDE5s, what they're doing is they're relaxing these blood vessels. They're actually decreasing your risk of heart attack, strokes, loss of limb. We've published on this. There's nothing dangerous. It doesn't actually increase your risk of, in fact, it decreases your risk of heart attacks. It probably decreases your risk of cancer. We haven't studied that as closely. But the point is that don't be worried. If you are on any of these medications, provided you know that you're on the correct medication and you're getting what you appropriately is supposed to be done, you're actually protecting yourself. So no. Don't be worried about these blue pills. Okay. They actually are
good.
Probably they we call them the aspirin of the rich, because aspirin thins the blood, but these drugs also do make a benefit. Yeah.
So the concern was that, you know, when you are 40 and above, try and get regularly checked. But are there patients, and I'm sure you've seen them, who are younger, who for whatever reason, you know, get themselves, you know, they find that they've got prostate cancer. Are there things to look out for, especially for younger guys?
Yeah. It generally, before the age of 40, you're very unlikely to get prostate cancer. Okay. But there are some things which you have to look out for. The most important is your family history. If any of your family has had a previous prostate cancer in first-degree relatives or breast cancer, because breast cancer and prostate cancer are like twins, you must keep a more vigilant eye on this. Because the point is that you're far more likely. So I would say for the average guy there, from the age of 40, get your blood test, the PSA done. We'll pick up your prostate cancer early. We'll cure it. If you have got a family history, you can probably consider, even from about the age of 35, especially because black men in South Africa and internationally have a slightly higher risk of prostate cancer, you should probably get your blood test taken a little bit earlier. But the reality is that you just need to be vigilant and take generally better care of your health.
You spoke about smoking, alcohol, its effect on the prostate.
Oh yeah, smoking basically increases the risk of all cancers, all heart diseases, all strokes, everything. You just have to really just make a choice, because technically, if you are smoking appropriately, which means smoking every day or whatever, you are 50% of guys are going to, people are going to die from their smoking. It's a life choice which you have to make. I'm not going to pontificate. I'm not going to judge anybody on what they do. But the point is that if you have to make that decision. So at the end of the day, I think you need to just make those calls for yourself and make sure that you understand. Because a choice without, I think it's, who is it, Rumi, one of my favorite philosophers, that says that a choice without consequences is no choice at all. You're making choices. If you make your decisions, that's fine, but you must make the appropriate choices for what you feel comfortable.
All right. I really, really appreciate your call, you calling through this evening. Prof, just maybe for those who may, I know you don't kind of see people randomly, but maybe you do. Do you?
I've seen many people randomly, my darling. Going to the pubs and stuff. Yes. And by the way, I must, don't drink too much, please, people. Even though, yeah. Anyways, but the point is that my main job is at Dr. George Makata Academic Hospital in Safako Makata Health Science University. If there's any issues, I do some limited private work, but my main job is there. And if they do want to get in touch, they can always call the university.
And maybe the point here is that, I mean, I think right now, especially George Mukari, fantastic reputation. The guys are likely to get help. So they mustn't think, you know, public hospital. From my understanding, it's probably the eminent hospital in Gauteng when it comes to dealing with prostate cancers.
Oh, it's one of the many, because to be honest, the government hospitals, we have a lot of bad reputation, but the point is that we really do, we're working very hard. You can get the advice, you can get the therapies. Please feel comfortable, even if you aren't on private medical scheme. Go to our hospitals. If there's any issues, you actually don't have to, our residents are working very hard. Our consultants are working hard. It's just a matter of having a discussion. We often don't have enough time to talk. But if there's not enough time to talk, just go and talk to get a connection to your head of department or whoever, and we can have a discussion. Yearly, you can get just equal treatment in government as you can in private, except that you might have to pay for some of the medications. But otherwise, please feel free to discuss it there.
All right. Prof, if you don't mind, can I just take a quick break and maybe open the lines, if you don't mind, and let's see if people have some questions. Is that okay with you?
No problem. That's fine. No problem.
All right. Let's take a quick break. I'll be back with more after this. In conversation with Professor Shingai Mutambiro, who is head of urology department at Sefako Makato Health Sciences University. He's also at George Mukari Hospital. And the lines are open, 086-000-0959. You can also send a voice note at 063-688-0959. Prof, before you go, yes, we spoke about the fact that they can't necessarily get hold of you directly, but you spoke about a few other organizations where, you know, where they can get help. Where could people, you know, get this kind of help?
Oh, yeah. I think the best resource for prostate cancer is going to be the Prostate Cancer Foundation of South Africa. It's done by our CEO. He's run by the CEO, our CEO, Mr. Andrew Oberholzer. It's online. You can pick up all the information that you need from there. When it comes to other sexual health activities, there are lots of places. There's the World Sexual Health. We've also got a men's health, a forum as well. But I think the important thing is to remember that there are resources for you to get treated. Don't be feeling too stressed about it. The vast majority of guys are going to have a bit of a problem with sexuality. If you live long enough, you're going to get prostate cancer. Everybody, majority are not going to be a problem. 50%, we don't want to find those 50%. So the point is just make sure that you do use the resources. You can get in touch with anybody. And by the way, it's not just me. All my colleagues, all my friends who are out there in the healthcare providers, they're willing to help. Just talk to your GP, talk to your healthcare provider, be it a urologist or a cancer specialist, oncologist. They will help you and they will direct you to where you need to go.
All right, I'm going to have to let you go. Really appreciate your time there. Thank you very much, Professor Shingai Mutambiro. And maybe we'll have him again soon to answer some of your questions. But thanks, Prof. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you for giving me the opportunity. And thanks to your listeners.
Thank you.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.